This is WFYI HD2, The Point.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Had to share with you some Curtis Mayfield. It's always good at the end of the work week. Coming fresh off the treadmill, literally. I jokingly refer to him as the Tony Randall of film sociology. Well, he actually is this week, Mike Perry from WFYI.
Hi, Matt. How you doing?
All right. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
And give our best to
Terry Garr. Give me a chance to catch my breath.
It's all right. So, end of the work week. Lots of stuff happening. Had a couple tributes we need to do because we didn't have time last week to do the Neil Gaiman interview, which is fine. That was cool. But we have an Oscar-winning film. A film with two Oscar winners in it, and then another one, well, it just doesn't have a chance. That's really okay. All right, we want to start things off with another interesting aspect of seeing films here in Indiana is, once the Academy Awards season is over, you think we're done seeing the artsy stuff, at least from last year.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. The film that won Best Foreign Film opens today, finally, in May. We gotta get better, so we'll work on that. But it's an Argentinian thriller drama called The Secret in Their Eyes. And this is, the build-up for this is interesting because I think a lot of people assumed The White Ribbon was going to win, probably because that was the most known of the three features, and we were surprised that it did not. And then A Prophet, the French prison drama, which was here a few weeks ago. And we watched that and went, wow, that's really good. And so now we're like, oh, well, let's see what won. And lo and behold, we have it. And it's a thriller drama, a driller,
A driller?
That's what it is. Not a killer driller, because that's Abel Ferrara.
See, years ago that used to mean something else.
I know it did, and we're not going to talk about that. So, but it's about an old, there's a man and a woman, not the French man and a woman, the story bounces back and forth between the 70s and modern day, and it's about an old rape and murder case that was solved, but the cop on the beat just doesn't feel quite right about it. You know why? He didn't have Peter Falk working with him.
Well,
so.
There you go.
Otherwise, it would be done in 75 minutes without commercials. Anyway, here's the trailer.
What is that? Yo quiero escribir sobre la causa de Morales.
¿Y qué sabes de escribir novelas vos?
En realidad nunca más hablamos de eso. ¿Por qué nunca más hablamos de eso?
¡Para, Chabelo, que es la justicia, hijo de puta!
Mi vida entera fue mirar para adelante. Atrás no es mi jurisdicción. Me declaro incompetente.
I love playing foreign film trailers. That's what I do.
The subtitles really add a lot for me.
Thank you. I know. Over the last few weeks, I've said this on a couple of shows. I said this in regards to A Prophet and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is still in theaters, and I still recommend, that for some people, the only thing that's getting in the way of a really good story are the subtitles that we make fun of. I remember on another radio station, not here, of course, but I remember trying to pitch the film Russian Ark, mm-hmm. which, if you remember, is basically the history of Russian art in one single take, 90 minutes. I mean, it's technically just an amazing film. But some people over in AM, not so thrilled about it. Now, I understand if you don't want to see a historical period piece about another country. Some people are xenophobic that way. Mm-hmm. But the three films I just mentioned, first off, I think they're all remaking. They're remaking at least two of them, I believe. If not, A Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is already trying to be remade.
Yeah, I read that the
other
day.
Nobody needs that. But these are all three modern stories, really well done, really well told. I didn't know what was happening with how it was going to end this thriller, and really good relationships between the man and the woman. And I have to say, there were four endings, not nine like Peter Jackson's The Big Epic, but I didn't mind those because it just, when we thought it was over, it would start up again and we would find out a new unraveling of this story. So I'm really glad it finally got to town a little late, but definitely go check this out. So hope you do.
Yes,
here at Film Sociology, we open with the small foreign film, and now we'll get to the big blockbuster. Do you realize, Mike Berry?
Yes.
It's been 20 years since the last major Robin Hood.
And I'm still scrubbing my brain on that a little bit.
I know. But it's been, that's two decades. And I think for a lot of people, they still react to it as if it happened a few years ago.
Well, that's probably a record for a Robin Hood movie, though, isn't it?
I want to say there was one, probably BBC, but that's, I mean, I shouldn't say that.
I mean,
The Gap. I mean, it's 20 years. And it's been 10 years since Gladiator, the first teaming of Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe, the Ford and Wayne of the 21st century, apparently. No, not that's.
Yeah, they are, yeah. We're sorry, Johns.
Yes. So here we have Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. We have Russell Crowe, Cate Blanchett, Mark Strong.
Loving Mark Strong. I mean,
well,
he's everywhere, man.
He is everywhere. Well, he's, you know, one right after another. Get those checks. Get them in. You deserve them. So, anyway, we'll give it a listen.
A king.
Some scenes.
Does not bargain for the loyalty that every subject owes him. Without loyalty, there is no kingdom. There is nothing.
I'm here to speak for Sir Walter Locksley.
Speak if you must.
You're trying to build for the future. You must set your foundation strong. The laws of this land enslaved people to its king. A king who demands loyalty, but offers nothing in return. You build a country like you build a cathedral, from the ground up. Empower every man, and you will gain strength.
It seems we are to share my chamber. A ruse to convince the servants.
Well, if the aim is deception, should you not be addressing me as my husband or my dear?
Don't be ridiculous. Well, are you coming or not?
Ask me nicely.
Please, dear husband, will you share my chamber?
Still here, then? The time being, refer to me as Sir Robert. I'll explain later. My men-at-arms. This is about as courtly as they get. Alan O'Deal, Will Scarlet, and Little John. Lady Marion.
I trust you had an historic evening.
Oh, for sure.
Lady Marion Locksley, my wife.
Well played. A bit rash, but well played nonetheless.
Okay, so we talked. It's been 20 years since our last Robin Hood, and the first snarky thing that seems like it's a remake of Gladiator because they had the same director and star, and guess what? The climactic fight scene, not like it.
Oh my God!
Gladiator for me was the film that it was the first. I knew I was starting to age, even at the ripe age of 30, where I was watching this and I said, I can't see anything. Show me something, and. It's a frustrating film for a couple of reasons. One, there are some genuinely good parts. I mean, Crow's fine, and Cate Blanchett's Maid Marian just whoops all kinds of tail with a sword. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, no, no.
But no fair maiden in this case. And you got your character actors, Mark Strong, Mark Addies, Friar Tuck. Always,
right.
You know, anytime you have a guy who does a sitcom with a hot wife, that's always a good thing. Max von Sydow shows up, William Hurt, a lot of good people. And this is a prequel. That's the other thing. This is the Casino Royale of Robin Hood. We get to see him bond with
the Merry Men.
How he becomes Robin Hood. And it's, me thinks they want to make another one. It's from the feeling of it, but it doesn't feel. I will say this compared to the Kevin Reynolds version, it doesn't feel like it's cramming the entire story down your throat.
That's good.
For the most part, because in that one, that's also meeting with the guys and finally fighting. And by the way, in this one, the Sheriff of Nottingham is more of a pawn than because it's really the King of England and the French who are really bad. Mark Strong gets to play the double agent, so working both sides on this. Not a bad six months between Sherlock Holmes, Kick-Ass, and this.
Oh, no. I mean, he's becoming one of the go-to villains. I first noticed him in Stardust.
See, I forget about that. So right.
He played the evil prince.
Right.
And then after that, I started seeing him in more and more stuff. He was
one of those guys.
He was in Miss Pettigrew's Day Off.
I forgot about that, too.
Lives for a Day. Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day.
For a Day. She was. He was the.
As opposed to Ferris Bueller, Lives for a Day.
Well, that's the whole.
Yeah.
He lives on. No, he was the one of Amy Adams' guys. Right.
Right? He played the club owner that was keeping her. And then after that, it just seems like a string. He was in the Ridley Scott movie with Russell Crowe and Body of Lies. He was in that.
Oh my gosh. That's
right. And that was the first one where he didn't really play a heavy. He played a kind of confidant who kind of befriends Leonardo DiCaprio in that.
I think
one.
He needs to do a light turn fairly soon, but nice seeing him.
Kick-Ass is about as close as a light turn to you've seen
that's
him. He handled the comedy of that pretty well, I thought.
Okay. So we have these moments, but for me, what kept getting stuck in my head were the name the homages, because there's, obviously Gladiator. There's a fight scene on the beach, so Private Ryan comes into my brain. The return of Martin Guerre, or Summersby, if you really don't like foreign films, because there's a scene where the crow, where Robin poses as the son. Basically, what happens is he goes from fighting. Oh, by the way, Danny Houston's in the first 10 minutes and dies. But he's going to return a sword to a fellow soldier, and the old blind father, played by Max von Sydow, asks him to pose as his son, who's been away for 10 years. And of course, Cate Blanchett plays the daughter, who's also in on the ruse. And so there's Return of Martin Guerre. Uh-huh. So all of these different movies, and yeah, blame my film critic brain, I understand. But all of these things kept getting in my head. And by the way, Robin Hood has dad issues in this film. Abandonment issues. Really? And this is what we get from Brian Helgeland, who did the screenplay. Helgeland, really? Robin Hood needs a hug?
Kevin Costner's Robin Hood had dad issues, too. I don't think Errol Flynn's did much, but...
No, Errol Flynn had other issues, but we're not going to talk about those.
Yeah.
Oh, but his Robin Hood, probably not so much. So, it's just frustrating.
I haven't seen the movie yet. I plan to see it this weekend. But from what I've read in the reviews, and I haven't... And the reviews have been pretty consistent from all of them I've read. His men aren't very merry.
No,
at all.
Not.
There's not a whole lot of levity in this movie. It's pretty dark, pretty heavy, pretty
violent too. And the 8-year-old asked if she could see it, and honestly, I was like, okay, what if I made her watch that? Okay, didn't make her, but I guess Enter the Dragon. Not all of it, but certain scenes in Enter the Dragon are probably the most violent I've shown her. I think she's gonna stick with the animated fox.
Okay.
On this one. Yeah, same. You know what? The other upside of this film? No Bryan Adams medley.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Or ballad, for that matter. So, and Ed Johnson and I talked about this movie afterwards, and hopefully I'll have him on the show and we can discuss this. He was ready for this film. He was ready for what was going to be just a kind of a no-brainer blockbuster film, and was ready for it. And I had to disagree with him on this. However, I have to admit that I was actually ready for Letters to Juliet, which also opens today.
Oh, my.
I know. Well, and I'll get to why I did in a little bit. It's Amanda Seyfried from, my gosh, Mamma Mia, and Chloe, and Jennifer's Body, Big Love. And yes, and she's starting, there are certain camera angles and star and sun moments that makes her look like a young Michelle Pfeiffer, and that's worrying me.
Oh, I've always thought she
really
looked like Michelle Pfeiffer.
I don't know, maybe this
those
one.
Those eyes, big saucer eyes.
Yeah, but I think because she's actually playing a character in her 20s, I'm starting to worry about that. I didn't think about that earlier. But anyway, give a listen.
We're leaving in 12 hours, and you haven't packed for Verona.
Close your eyes. Good, right?
Verona, Italy, where Romeo first met Juliet.
Sophia! Guardando, my sweet Sophia!
There is a place where the heartbroken leave notes asking Juliet for her help. It was there I discovered a letter that changed my life forever. I didn't go to Lorenzo, Juliet. I promised I'd meet him to run away together. But instead, I left him waiting for me. Please, Juliet, tell me what I should do. Love, Claire. It was written in 1957. I have to write back.
May I ask which one of you wrote this letter to my grandmother?
I wrote that.
What were you thinking?
She deserved an answer. Excuse me, Claire? Hi, my name is Sophie.
Juliet.
So you've come to find your Lorenzo?
Yes.
Of course, a card or letter is just too simple.
May I come with you?
Yes, of course.
We're looking for a Lorenzo Bartolini.
I am Lorenzo Bartolini.
Sono io Lorenzo.
I am Lorenzo. Sono io Lorenzo.
I am Lorenzo Bartolini.
Take him.
This is madness. Charlie doesn't approve, which makes this all the more fun.
What you're doing for Claire is sweet.
It's just that I'm genuinely worried for her.
I need more time with her.
Is this in a good time because I'm in the middle of something?
It's not supposed to be that way. We're supposed to want to be with each other all the time.
So isn't your fiancé starting to get just a tad lonely?
I doubt he even notices I'm gone.
Do you think he's still out there? Lorenzo?
Yeah. most incredible few days.
How many soakers do you think there are on this planet? Don't wait 50 years before you find us.
Okay, you kind of get the gist of it. I mean, nothing very predictable, unpredictable at all, I should say, of this bill. She's engaged to Gael Garcia Bernal in his first Hollywood romantic comedy, I think. And this is a film. He's the most flawed character, but he's not a cad in this one. He's just too occupied with the restaurant. And you know, she meets these women, and yeah, she submits she responds to a letter that was written by everyone's favorite radiant Nigerian 70s something.
Vanessa Redgrave.
Vanessa Redgrave shows up, and I'll save the final thing for a moment. But this is one. This is another non-psychotic romantic comedy. Kate Hudson's not in this. That's Amanda. And you know, of course, it looks gorgeous. I mean, you get to shoot in Italy. Who, you know, how do you say no to a project like this? Right. And it's directed by Gary Winnick, who gave us 13 Going on 30. So it has that light, frothy touch. And really, and Amanda's fine in it. And oh, Christopher Egan, the British Matt Damon, known for Aragon, among other things, of course, is the grandson of Vanessa Redgrave. And of course, they don't like each other.
At first?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
So that, all that being said, even with it, when it gets to, you know, the extremely schmaltzy climax with the young couple, I still actually liked it. It was fine. It was, you know, lightweight. And I think the main power of this is Vanessa Redgrave. And by the way, we need to support as many Redgraves and Richardsons as we can nowadays.
The herd's thinning a little bit.
Right. But she just has a really nice touch to a light comedy. She's not eccentric. She's not bawdy. She's just this woman that wants this thing to happen. And now my favorite part, if you hadn't seen the trailers yet, and the more I dug into this a little bit more and found out a lot more behind the scenes, and I hope this is on DVD. Yes, you do see Lorenzo up on a white horse. That's Franco Nero.
Really?
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, there is a mini Camelot reunion. Franco Nero, the great Italian star, who occasionally popped up in films like, Django was his first notoriety here in America, the spaghetti western by Sergio Corbucci. And then, of course, he did this and many other films. He and I share a credit. He was also in Die Hard 2.
Oh, man.
Remember that. But, so there is, so, and they work really, I mean, he shows up at the very end, but they have some nice chemistry together. And I found out why. Nero and Redgrave got married in 2006. And on top of that,
I did not know that.
They had a thing after making Camelot and had a child together. So I'm really, really hoping there's a documentary in the DVD.
That sounds like a much more interesting story than this movie.
You know what? I probably is. So hopefully there's more scenes of this. But they work really well together, believe it or not. And it's nice to see Franco Nero. I've always liked him.
No, I do believe it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't done any checking to see, you know, how much of an influence they had on the script, on getting this production made. But it's a nice little, especially from a film geek standpoint. I mean, you got a chick flick that has film geek background to it. So yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this first. Yes, it's even better than Leap Year. There, I said it, and you should go see this, whether you like looking at her or looking at gorgeous spots of Italy, or seeing a really solid performance from Vanessa Redgrave. So check this out.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and this is also a blatant excuse for me to play this from 1967, the film version of Camelot. Here's Franco Nero and Vanessa Redgrave, I Loved You Once in Silence. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
I loved you once in silence, and misery was all I knew, trying so to keep my love from showing, all the while not knowing you loved me too. Yes, loved me. Some silence, your heart filled with dark despair, thinking love would flame in you forever, and I'd never, never know the flame was there. Then one day we cast away our secret longing, the raging tide we held inside would hold no more. Last was broken. We flung wide our prison door. Every joyous word of love was spoken. And now there's twice as much grief, twice the strain for us. Twice the despair, twice the pain for us. As we had known before.
The silence at last was broken. We flung wide our prison door.
Every joyous word of love was spoken.
And after all had been said, here we are, my love.
Silent once more, and not far, my love.
From where we were
before. I'm going to give Randall a rest tonight. That was Vanessa Redgrave and Franco Nero, real-life couple and onstage couple, and right now Julie Andrews and Robert Goulet are really upset. This is from the film version of Camelot, called I Loved You Once in Silence. They are back, reunited on screen, and it looks so good in Letters to Juliet. Nice stuff. This is, of course, back in 1967 when they cast non-singers in the musicals.
Of course.
We'll get to that. And we won't. The less we talk about Paint Your Wagon, the better. All right, let's move on. This is the DVD portion. I'm Matthew Sosi along with Mike Perry. And new on DVD and Blu-ray is the Return of Mel Gibson. And there was mixed rejoicing.
he's the Mel you knew and loved.
Well, he's darker, angrier.
A little darker and angrier, but definitely not as light as the Lethal Weapon movies. But he came ready to kick some butt.
And here he is in Edge of Darkness.
Hi, Dad. I'm gonna come home for a few days. I love you.
Waiting here forever.
You're always early.
Oh, you sat down already? Come on, let's go home. Seeing someone?
Yeah, I wish you had someone.
You're my girl.
Craven!
Still a lot of unanswered questions, but it appears Detective Thomas Craven was the intended target.
This is someone armed and dangerous.
What do you think I am?
How's he dealing with it personally?
Emma, Craven's phone.
Hello.
Mr. Craven, we have things to talk about.
Like your name and what you're doing here?
Like who shot your daughter.
I want to know what my daughter did here.
What she did was classified.
Samuel Charlotte Craven was flagged as a possible threat to the United States of America.
My daughter was not the type.
Everybody talks about power, but they don't really understand.
Cases like these are never solved. You just never can connect A to B.
How do you know that?
Because I'm usually the guy that stops you connecting A to B.
You're gonna follow me to the city of Boston. Welcome to hell.
What's it feel like?
We need to abort right now.
It's too late. It's already been done.
I'm not going to arrest anyone. I never do.
You are out of your depth and far from your jurisdiction.
My daughter was Emma Craven.
I'm the guy with nothing to lose. Fasten your seatbelt. Well, you had better decide whether you're hanging on the cross or banging in the nails.
Get it? Because he did
that movie.
Yeah. That's there. Well, this is directed by Martin Campbell, who gave us Casino Royale, and among others. And it's also based on a BBC miniseries, which I now want to watch. So if anything else, like State of Play, this film makes me want to watch that. Mm-hmm. And that's all I could really say, because otherwise it's a standard Mel Gibson revenge film without the humor.
I'm guessing there's a lot of backstory we didn't get in the movie.
You think?
Yeah, just a little.
We'll have to see if the DVD or Blu-ray has the extra stuff on this. One thing we can agree on, best thing of the film, Ray Winstone.
Winstone.
Love Ray Winstone. As a guy you're not sure whose side he's on, or else he's got his own side, who comes in and helps out at a moment's notice. Very, very creepy, but very effective.
Like I said, he came close to stealing the movie from Mel, but like I was saying at the break, I couldn't understand him a lot of the time. I needed subtitles. For those of you
like
who really hate subtitles.
Yeah,
I need some subtitles sometimes.
So yeah, but if you know if that's all you're looking for, it just didn't seem like I think we had higher expectations for the return of Mel Gibson, but apparently not, because you just need him stomping tail and taking names and being angry. So. Overall, well, apparently, there are no Jews in Boston.
I think it's overrated.
Shut up, you!
And let's move on. Yeah, I said it. Let's move on to the thriller Legion, also known as the third Dennis Quaid film in a row not screened for the press.
And there was a reason for that.
When I was a little girl, my mother spoke of a prophecy. Of a time when all the world would be covered in darkness and the fate of mankind would be decided. She said God had changed. He was mad at his children.
Charlie, is it?
Yeah.
How far along are you?
Ah, just about there.
But a baby is gonna burn.
Oh, what? I'd like you to apologize.
You're all gonna die!
Okay, that's enough, because that's when she crawls up the wall, and that's the one image that everybody has out of this film, whether they've watched it or not.
Yeah, it's the evil granny doing her Betty White number, and
you know, Betty wouldn't do this because they didn't ask to give her enough money. Okay, so we have, the apocalypse, archangels fighting each other. One of those angels is married to Jennifer Connelly. Little Night of the Living Dead, everybody trapped in one room, and character actors getting a big check.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Dennis Quaid, Charles S. Dutton, Paul Bettany plays the angel. I have to admit, Doug Jones has a small role in this. Doug Jones, former film sociology guest. He was the ice cream man.
I thought so.
Yes.
I thought so.
And I need to Facebook him and give him. He goes where the work is. That's all I guess I can say to it. Lots of shooting and lots of things screaming and screeching and jumping at you. And yes, if the baby's born, mankind will be fine as we know it. And is this really interesting for anybody?
It's just Dennis Quaid going further down the whirlpool down the drain, I think.
I feel really bad. Dennis
Quaid.
He's a multimillionaire, and I'm like, Ed Johnson Ott told me, don't feel sorry for him. I'm like, the dude has done Pandorum, G.I. Joe, and this.
I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's like he's picking up the paychecks. He's phoning these things in. He's not the Dennis Quaid I remember and love from All American Hero and
Breaking Away. You know, we're going that far back, or as I was reminded from reading Onion, the TV movie Bill,
or even The Rookie. You know,
not the Charlie Sheen Clint Eastwood movie, the really good baseball movie.
Right,
right. So, well, here you go.
No, 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 no.
Another film not screened for the press. But slightly better than Legion, Daybreakers, which has an interesting cast. You have Ethan Hawke, Willem Dafoe, and Sam Neill. Yeah. And it's set 10 years in the future, and now, yes, it's finally happened. Vampires have taken over. No glitter, however. And there's a blood shortage. Take that symbolism for what it's worth. And we'll give this a listen.
being a vampire, Sam.
I'm good at this. I was never very good at being human.
Immortality is the miracle. We are blessed.
What happens when there isn't a single drop left?
These are desperate times.
We only have enough blood to sustain our population till the end of the month.
We're talking about the extinction of the human race.
The blood substitute is not found immediately.
This will happen to all of us.
A substitute would replace our need for a human supply.
There will always be those who are willing to pay extra for the real thing.
We need your help.
We want to rebuild the human race.
A blood substitute is not a cure.
I was like you once.
Not no more.
Who are you?
We're the folks with the crossbows.
That last breath of humanity will vanish as soon as the blood does.
I found a cure. I can change you back. What's the cure?
Then to kill you.
I'm already dead.
It doesn't hurt me.
Can anyone hear me?
I wanna feel how it feels.
There's soundness. They're everywhere.
You wanna know that it doesn't hurt me.
No!
If I only could make a deal with God, get him to swap our place out. Be running up that road, be running up that hill. No problem.
Oh, by the way, BP doesn't know what to do with the blood spill going on in the Gulf. Yes, it's that symbolic. What surprised me about this film was it's not a horror movie. I think that may have confused a lot of people. This is a corporate thriller that's disguised as a vampire thriller.
It's a corporate thriller.
It's more corporate
with vampires.
With vampires, as opposed to Twilight or Dracula or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that being said, it was kind of standard political thriller, corporate thriller. But the look of it was kind of good. I didn't get tired of the yellow eyes. I can't believe I'm saying this. I wish Willem Dafoe went a little more further, a little mm-hmm. more over the top as the crazed southern former vampire turned vampire slayer.
I'm with you there. I wish he'd gone a little more James Woods with it.
That's a good way of describing it.
But what bothered me about this movie, I did enjoy the movie, but it seems so derivative from a lot of other vampire-ish movies that I've seen. It's like they took the human farm scene from Blade Trinity and said, hey, that'll make a movie.
Right. And they're running out of blood. Blood shortage, human shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Take that for what
it is. It's people!
That's the end of the show.
Sorry,
ease up on that. We'll fix that later. So here you go.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, let's move on to the... Yes, everybody does the Tim Matheson moment when they hear that. All right, I want to move on to the Blu-rays quickly. Obviously the question, if you own a Blu-ray, would you buy this? And
I'm a recent Blu-ray.
You jumped on.
I had to, man. They released Star Trek on Blu-ray. I had to.
I see. Welcome aboard. Okay, here we go. Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I get the Blu-ray.
For me, it depends on if there are new features. Now, my two problems with Private Ryan, and it's an excellent film. Just once, I want a platoon with two guys from the same region. I want two Southern guys. I want two New York Jews. I want two Midwestern farm guys.
Because there are no Jews in Boston.
That's right. They're not in Edge of Darkness, but they're in this.
Yeah.
And the other problem is, remember at the beginning of the film, the old man falls down, the eyes morph into Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
And who do we find out is really that old man at the end of the film?
Who?
Matt Damon.
That's right.
So how could this old guy remember the first 2 hours of the film he's not in? This is why it lost Best Picture. I stand by it. Spielberg may have won Best Director. I'm happy Shakespeare in Love won. Come and get me. So there. Also on Blu-ray, Dr. Zhivago.
No.
No?
No.
I would. I love David Lean. and Julie Christie, for different reasons.
Well, for me, the difference between DVD and Blu-ray is the quality of the image.
You think they would clean that up?
No, I'm sure they would, but it's not necessary with, you know, movies that aren't beginning to end action, action, action.
I see. Okay.
For me, anyway.
All right, that's cool. All right, let's see what else is on Blu-ray. Oh, of course. The Karate Kid 1 and 2, not 3, and not the one with Hilary Swank. Just 1 and 2, because the remake's coming out.
Right.
No thanks. I didn't find the originals all that great to begin with. Well, sorry.
At least in the original, you could understand, you know, Pat Morita.
You're not surprised. You're not shocked that Jackie Chan could be a master of. Yeah, I know. Criterion Blu-ray is putting out M, Fritz Lang film with Peter Lorre. Mm-hmm. I would love to get that. Oh my, the Magnificent Seven collection. So you get all of them. You get. All right. Let's see if I remember. Magnificent Seven.
Uh-huh.
Magnificent Seven Return,
uh-huh.
Guns of the Magnificent Seven, and the Magnificent Seven Ride.
Wow, you're good.
Yes, but I can't remember all 28. But no, I remember, obviously McQueen and Brenner, mm-hmm. and then Yul Brynner showed up in the second one, and then it was George Kennedy leading the third, and Lee Van Cleef leading the fourth. That's why I'm here at Film Sociology. What else is out there? Oh! Well, it's not on Blu-ray, but Mr. Magoo and Sherwood Forest out today. Isn't that cute?
Just in time for a real good Robin Hood story.
That's right. The Robin Hood collection, of course, is also on Blu-ray. Rock and Roll High School.
Wow.
If there's a lot, and there's more stuff of PJ Souls, who's also interviewed in The Onion this week. Go read that.
PJ Souls.
It's a good interview. They did a random roles with her, and it's really long.
And I haven't heard about her in years.
If you think about it, and some guy wrote in, not me, of course, on The Onion, but said, think about the trifecta of her, Halloween, Rock and Roll High School, and Stripes. That's a lifelong crush right there.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, PJ, I love the afterglow of the Aunt Jemima treatment. Okay. If you know the film, you know what I'm talking about. And a lifelong love affair with a certain garment is born. All right, but let's take a short break and get our bearings. And here is my tribute to Lena Horne, If You Believe, from The Wiz.
If you believe within your heart, you know that no one can change the path that you must go. Believe what you feel and know you're right, because the time will come around when you'll say it's yours. Believe that you can go home. Believe you can stand on air. Yes, click your heels 3 times. If you believe. Heart. Go ahead, believe all these things, not because I told you to. No, go ahead, believe in yourself. Woo. Yeah, believe in yourself. Woo. Yeah, believe in yourself. As I
salute, Lena. That's Lena Horne as Glinda the Good with the song If You Believe from the bizarre film version musical of The Wiz, directed by, of all people, Sidney Lumet. Sidney Lumet, of course, of My goodness, 12 Angry Men, Failsafe, Dog Day Afternoon, The Verdict, a lot of heavy gritty.
And then this.
And then, well, there was a period where big-name directors tried at least musicals once. Once. You had Martin Scorsese with New York, New York. You had John Huston with Annie, Sir Richard Attenborough with A Chorus Line, and, well... Yeah, some better than others, I guess. And well, technically, even before this, you had Francis Coppola working on Finian's Rainbow, and depending on who you talk to, One from the Heart back in the early 80s.
Ooh.
But no, salute to Lena Horne on that. First, I think it was the first woman that, she was the first one I could see that you could be still hot at 60,
mm-hmm.
way back when. So she was always the apple of Fred Sanford's eye, among others. This is Film Sociology. I'm here with Mike Perry. We got some other tributes we need to get to, and this is one I'm sad to say we didn't get to last week, and especially since we brought up her sister earlier. But Lynn Redgrave passed, and am I playing a clip from one of her two Oscar-nominated performances, Gods and Monsters and Georgie Girl? No. Am I playing something from Shine, which has a special place in my heart? No. Am I playing the remake of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane that she did with her sister? No. I'm playing this.
Give me, madam, I beg your puberty.
Beg it not, for thou hast dropped the royal rubies and emeralds on floor.
Yes, I fain wouldst pick it up and wouldst pin it and fain well on my fane.
I pin?
Yes, extend thy fane, madam, and I therefore on the knocker it hangs perfect.
Nope. Didst I feel aright, or didst I feel that thy two hands did upon my royal body cop a feel?
Oh, madam, not I, surely, would never lay my hands on the royal tomatoes in mixed company.
Hearken to me, if my husband the king and my son the doctor walketh near upon these paved paths, and heareth what thou sayest about copping a feel, thy life would not be worth a plugged nickel.
But, madam, so beautiful do they lay there, one on either side.
Either side? That's the way they were made.
A matched set. I fell on my bells.
Thank you, Lynn. Here she was as the queen from 1972, Woody Allen's Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex, But Were Afraid to Ask, the first segment called What is an Aphrodisiac? This, of course, led to the famed chastity belt scene with jokes we really can't say, but... Yeah,
but enjoy, nonetheless.
Yeah, so she was radiant in that, and...
Yeah. I'm a game show nut.
What's my perversion?
There's that.
And the other thing, do you remember the rabbi at the end of... No, there was a game called What's My Line, and this one, it was What's My Perversion. It was
right.
Gene Barry and Jack Barry and Regis Philbin and Kitty Carlisle. And at the end of it, and I remember this because I watched this film as a kid, that explains a lot, and then watched it in college at Ball State. And they had this segment at the end of What's My Perversion where if you wrote in... your perversion, and it was selected, you got to reenact it on the show. Well, they picked, I'm not kidding, a rabbi from Muncie, Indiana.
I remember that.
The one. And in this one, he's tied to a chair and then whipped by a gorgeous blonde dominatrix while his wife sits at his feet and eats pork. Great image. We can't talk about the segment with Burt Reynolds and Tony Randall.
The movie shaped my whole adult life, I think.
Kept me from reading the book. Didn't really need to after that. And the great John Carradine experiment. Anyway, but with all that, Lynn Redgrave, bless you. Thank you for all of your work and your wonderful family. Okay, a couple other folks that passed recently with some titles that'll rattle your cobwebs a little bit. Actress Dorothy Provine.
Oh, yeah.
From 75, best known as, and I forgot she was that woman, Milton Berle's wife and Ethel Merman's daughter. And some Mad Men. That was an interesting, I think that was the original, no, maybe the Honeymooners, of, gorgeous wife, but look at him. Then again, Milty had a gift. That's why she married him. We can't talk about that. But other film credits include The Bonnie Parker Story, Live Fast, Die Young, Good Neighbor Sam, the original That Darn Cat, and The Great Race. So there's that.
Did they remake That Darn Cat?
With Christina Ricci.
Oh, God. That's right.
Remember that?
I don't want to.
And Italian writer Furio Scarpelli, who received an Oscar nomination for the Il Postino in 1996. Also did a segment of The Witches, if I remember correctly, but is best known as one of the co-writers of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Love that film. Love it. So go rent that. Colleen Yudis, I'm talking to you. Get around to it.
I think I'd rather rent a Mad World.
Really?
Yeah.
Or Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? It is a three-hour comedy.
Yeah.
Stanley Kramer and half the Screen Actors Guild and Spencer Tracy.
I
need to watch that again.
Yeah, I don't remember very much of it because it was big when I was like three. But but those ensemble comedies, they made a bunch of them in that era.
That's true, with really long titles.
Right, and just about every actor and comedian in Hollywood at the time.
Yeah, they dug the Three Stooges up, and let's see, I'm trying to remember.
I think Buddy Hackett was in
Buddy Hackett and Mickey Rooney were a team, and then there was Jonathan Winters and Phil Silvers, and they didn't trust each other, and it was Sid Caesar and his cute wife, Milton Berle, and I think Frankie Avalon shows up, and Ethel, and Peter Falk and Rod Chester are running around, and of course Spencer Tracy, and there was quite a few. I think we gripe about comedies being over 2 hours. This thing was three.
Oh yeah.
And I can't remember if it had an intermission or not.
I never saw it in a theater. I always saw it in like Channel 4 in the afternoons or something.
And it was always under a big W.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I'll have to go check that out again. So, Mike Perry, what else have you watched recently?
I saw Iron Man 2 twice last weekend.
Twice?
Yeah.
That good?
Well, the first time, I went with a friend of mine, and we got there a little late, and we were forced to sit in the front row.
Oh.
So, I felt obligated to go see it again so I could actually see it.
And how'd it go the second time around?
Actually, seeing it the second time worked better for me, because then stuff that I was having trouble making out at very close range made sense to me now.
Okay.
But the movie, not as good as the first one, but it has its moments.
I think
it's
a serviceable, it's a stepping stone
right.
film. You know, the third one better really rock out.
I love that there was more Gwyneth in this.
Well, I am too, but for that reason.
But, I think her character
is developing a little more.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth.
Sorry.
Her character is the only one that has really grown. Because if anything, Stark's kind of regressed from the first movie because he's being absorbed by all this fame and.
Yeah, and I wasn't crazy about the superhero as a celebrity angle as others.
But it's you got a kind of touch of that in Batman and Robin, but that's not,
Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Not this.
Yeah, you wouldn't see Christian Bale's Batman doing stuff like that.
No, and drunk and scratching records.
Right, but. In that regard, it's kind of true to the comic books because Tony Stark is an alcoholic in the comic books.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm a comic book geek, too. Shows and comic books.
I still wish Mickey Rourke had more to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully Rockwell's going to have a more of an appearance.
Yeah, it was feeling kind of like Batman Returns in that, maybe one too many villains.
Maybe. As I said last week, I think Mickey Rourke got his check for The Wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Thomas Hayden Church got his wrestler his check for Sideways by doing Spider-Man 3. I wish he had done more, but I think if he'd done one or the other. And, what black guy will they put in the third one? No, I'm kidding. I think they're going to keep Don Cheadle in this one.
It was amazing to me, even the ushers came out before the screening and said, "You want to stay through the credits." And I was...
Wow.
And I was still one of the... last people to leave the theater.
All right, wait a minute. If you don't mind, where did you see this?
At the Rave in Plainfield.
And they told you to stick around?
Yes.
I've never heard that happening before.
Yeah.
And you were one of the last?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I always stay through the credits anyway.
Yes, because you should, because you acknowledge the people that work very hard for your dollar entertainment.
Absolutely, but, The credits in this movie are like 10 minutes long, so it's really pushing your endurance, especially if you've had a big drink, to sit through these credits. But there is a payoff at the end of the movie, so yes, of course, stick through the credits.
Yeah, the screening I had, it was about a third, and of course they were the expected lot. So wow, that's two shocks right there in one evening. That's cool. Something else I got to see was, have you watch the 30 for 30 documentaries on ESPN?
I have not.
There are many, obviously, you know, hour-long documentaries about particular sports subjects, and the one I just watched recently, and I've liked most of them, except for maybe one or two, called Straight Outta L.A., directed by and narrated by Ice Cube. Mm-hmm. And it's about the connection between gangster rap and the L.A. Raiders.
Yeah, okay.
If you think about it, because when they moved to L.A., it also helped that they won the Super Bowl quickly, but the whole image and the fact that L.A. didn't really have a team. The Rams moved to Anaheim, and groups like N.W.A. and other West Coast rap groups just embraced that look, that demeanor, because the early 80 Raider teams were actually really good, right up there with the 70s mm-hmm. teams. And I hadn't really thought about that and realized, there was such a link between, a style of music and, a football team or a sports team in general. You know, the L.A. Kings changed their colors for a particular reason, and they happen to be also silver and black. So something to be said about that. But if you get a chance, go check out the 30 for 30 series on ESPN or ESPN Classic. What else have you seen recently?
Let's see. I'd have to go back a couple of weeks because I double-dipped Iron Man 2. I did see the Irish movie. A Shine of
Rainbows.
Rainbows, I saw that.
Featuring film sociology guest Connie Nielsen.
Yes, and loved it. Loved it. It doesn't take much to get me into an Irish movie. But
I knew it.
But the story was great. Aidan Quinn.
Nice seeing him. Nice seeing Connie Nielsen.
Again.
Yeah.
It's like we said, a couple weeks ago. You'd like to see someone other than a gruff Irish father, but
it'll do. But it's a step in the right direction.
He didn't go over the top, and you kind of knew where his character was coming from. I cursed you when I came back because you didn't warn me about the love story aspect of it. But and we won't go into that.
Did I ruin your fantasy life again?
But it was a very nice movie, and I enjoyed that a lot.
So hopefully check it out when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
And on that note, Mike Perry, thank you so much for sitting in with
me. No
problem. Take a shower. more movies next week, more DVDs and Blu-rays, more guests, we shall see. So until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. I'm Matthew Socey, M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, I'm also on Facebook. Salute to both my cast and crews from Three Musketeers and Three Bags Full. Oh, I'm also going to be at the Broad Ripple Art Fair tomorrow and Sunday with Mud Creek Players. So if you want to come out and say hi and enroll your kids in Barn Rats, I'll be there. So go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org. It's also a podcast on Monday. See ya!
This is WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.